Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 5th of May. Women and heart disease is our subject this hour. How to prevent it, how to diagnose it, and how to treat it. I don't think we normally think about this, but it is the nation's number one killer of women, with more women dying of cardiovascular disease than the next five causes of death combined, including all forms of cancer. In February of 2004, the American Heart Association launched a Go Red for Women movement and the goal to educate women that heart disease is their leading cause of death. On May 15th, here in Milwaukee, the Go Red for Women luncheon will be held. I'm trying to solicit tables and get people to go to that luncheon for obvious reasons, because it's a good thing to do. As many of you know, I suffered a heart attack on January 31st of 2008, and I've survived. Here I am, which is great, but I had a number of issues as a result of that, which we'll talk about with other heart attack survivors. Two of the women in our studio this morning also suffered heart attacks, and we have a cardiologist with us to guide us through all the medical questions that you may have. Let me give you our phone number off the bat, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and if you'd like to send an email, you can do that. Send it to us at talk@wpr.org. Joining us in our Milwaukee studios, Liz Green. What a dramatic story she has. She was 7 months pregnant with twins when she suffered a massive heart attack. I'll ask her to tell her story because it is quite amazing. She has done amazing work now. She's a national speaker for the American Heart Association. She's written a couple books, The Busy Woman's Guide to a Healthy Heart, and also Five Simple Strategies to Find the Happiness, Satisfaction, and Zest that You Deserve, Passion for Life. Liz, thank you very much for being with us. Your story is so amazingly dramatic, isn't it? I'm glad you're here.
It's a good story because it turns out well.
Yes, it does turn out well.
I fortunately have two very healthy 8-year-old daughters, and I'm healthy, and I have a very happy husband. That's all true.
I'm sure. And part of your story is there was technology. It's amazing how much new technology there is in advancement in learning about heart disease because of equipment that was available to you, right?
That is absolutely true. I had something called a beating heart bypass, which compared to a traditional bypass where the heart is stopped and you're put on the heart-lung machine to keep the blood circulating through your body, the surgeon uses this sort of amazing tool. If you're a sewer, it's sort of like a foot on a sewing machine that holds little pieces or little places on the heart still while the surgeon stitches on it and repairs it while the heart is still beating, while it's still circulating blood for you. It is quite incredible. For me, what is just, I know that there was someone looking out for me that day because that technology didn't even exist 18 months before my heart attack. I wouldn't have survived a traditional heart attack in that I had a cesarean to deliver the girls right before I had open heart surgery, which is kind of an unusual situation. And because of that, they were very worried that had they thinned my blood enough to go through the heart-lung machine, I just would have bled out from the cesarean that was already there. So this new technology really is the reason that I'm still here.
You look wonderful. You just look so vibrant and healthy, don't you?
Well, thank you. I do try. I'm very dedicated to making sure that I do the work to be here because, unlike many people, I know that getting to see my girls graduate from high school or go to college or get married and have children of their own is not a given for me. I need to do the work to get there. So I do.
And we'll talk about that work in a moment. Let me introduce our other guest. Bobbi Hashek-Berger is with us. She had a heart attack the same day I did on January 31st, but hers was 4 years ago. She had triple bypass surgery for 99%, 86%, and 68% blockages. And I understand, Bobbi, that you had a family history, but it was on the male side of the family, right? Not the female side of the family.
Yes. My father died at age 50. He had 11 massive heart attacks in 9 days. My grandfather died at 47, and the whole family history on my dad's side, none of the men lived past 50. I thought I was, quote, given graces to make it through because my grandmother died at 89, the other one just short of 100.
Right.
Did I believe that the women in my family had this problem? No. And did I do anything to find out if I might have it genetically? No. That heart attack woke me up.
And you were given, your husband was with you at the time, right? So you were...
I woke up early in the morning, was getting ready for my seventh day of work in a row. Had a very high-stress job, worked many hours a day. I called him into the bathroom, and I looked at him, and I said, I'm having a heart attack.
Oh, my.
I'm going to need an ambulance. He reached into the cabinet, took out Bayer aspirin, handed me aspirins. I sat there, collapsed on the toilet. He called the ambulance, and I don't think it took 5 minutes, because where I live, the ambulance is quite close. The paramedics came in. As soon as I got wheeled out my doorway, I was gone. I knew nothing until I woke up at 8:30 that night. This was before 6 in the morning.
Oh, my.
At 8:30 that night, I came to with tubes down my throat, all over my body, not knowing what was going on, unable to breathe, fighting everything, and they tied me down because I tried ripping it all out.
Oh, my.
And there was my family. And in my sub awake conscious thing, I could feel my husband's very warm, large hands on one side, my son-in-law wringing my wrist with cold hands, my daughter holding me with hands that felt like she put them in the refrigerator. I knew they were all there. And they brought me back. And it was just amazing. I mean, totally amazing what they can do. And the start of it all, of course, was that my husband didn't even want me to be at that hospital. He had this firm belief that I had to be flown with flight for life to come into Milwaukee to the better hospitals. And it took the surgeon to get him to understand there's no time.
You have to get
to
the hospital.
Time.
Right.
The faster you realize what's going on, the faster you get those aspirins, the faster you get the care. I don't move around my house without a phone.
Mm-hmm.
And aspirins are on me everywhere I go. I have my brother who is, thank God, he's at high risk. He's very slim, very tall. He walks every day. He walks around with a little zipper bag with aspirins, and he has his cell phone on. And I made him promise he would never, ever go without.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also look wonderful, don't you? You look healthy and
you work
happy.
At it. You work at it. I have to work a little more at my weight. It's been a big challenge. I mean, when they keep saying, you got to lose 25 more pounds, I'm like, oh, God. But I do have to do it.
Right. We'll talk about how we've had to change our lives. We're also happy to have Dr. Rob Roth with us during the course of this conversation. And he's a cardiologist, and he has received all kinds of awards for his work. He's been named the Doctor of the Year by Milwaukee Magazine. He's also been named Doctor of the Year on a national level. And he's with us to give us all kinds of medical advice. He is cardiologist with the cardiovascular group at Columbia St. Mary's Hospitals. And we thank you very much, because I'm sure we'll get a lot of medical advice here. You know, Dr. Roth, it is amazing to me that we don't think of this cardiovascular disease as being the number one killer of women. I'm sure that most people would say it's cancer and that they would say it's a certain form of cancer. It is not. It's cardiovascular disease, isn't it?
You know, I think that is very true. And as you said, it is the number one killer of women. It exceeds all other causes of the top five causes combined. The other more bothersome thing is that over the course of the last 15 years, the mortality and the chance of dying from a cardiovascular event has decreased in men, but has actually increased a little.
Really?
Women. And I think that's testament to the fact that we have not concentrated on early detection. We've not concentrated on modification of metabolic risk factors. I mean, I'm sitting here in a room with three people that have been, you know, lucky enough to survive potentially catastrophic events through the technology that's available these days. And we're very good at intervening on an acute interventional basis, like you all three have had the experience. What we're not as good at is early detection and the adjustment and modification of the risk of those events happening. And I think that's really the next step. We must concentrate more on prevention rather than early intervention.
What kinds of technology is out there now for early detection? Could any of us have known that there was something up with our hearts that it could have been detected earlier?
Well, I think Liz had a little bit of a unique situation. I mean,
yes.
That's not your garden variety cardiac event, granted, but the vast majority of women who are at cardiovascular risk, who have family histories, even if it's not the women in the family, having first-generation relatives, which are parents and siblings, having coronary artery disease at early in life, such as men in their 40s and women in their 50s, are at increased risk. And I think that women have to be more sensitive to the fact that metabolic problems such as weight, such as cholesterol levels, such as glucose intolerance or early signs of diabetes and the metabolic syndrome really should be acting at that point. The onus is on the cardiovascular and the medical community to start sensitizing people and women in particular to those risks and intervene early on.
And women's symptoms of heart attack are different, aren't they, frequently than men's? Or even early problems that we might have are different than males' problems?
That's very true. Women are more likely to present with an atypical symptom. You know, the classic story of mid-sternal or mid-chest pain with shortness of breath and radiation to the left side is the classic story. But again, women are less likely to tell that story than men. Women's symptoms may be something vague, such as shortness of breath or fatigue, or just a listlessness type of thing. Exercise-induced symptoms of any kind are bothersome.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like you in that my parents lived to be very old. My dad was 93 when he died. My mom was 86. There wasn't any heart disease problems. And I live badly. You know, I got to admit it, and I hate to admit this, and I have before to a public audience, but I smoked cigarettes for a number of years. We did it on the radio. People used to smoke in the studio, and it was part of the radio whole routine. Shame on me for having done that, but it was a contributing factor and probably a big contributing factor in addition to my dad dying and trying to deal with a child, you know, who was still in school and having his issues, and my dad in Chicago being sick, and the stress level was unbelievable. But, you know, shame. I don't think they even ought to sell the things anymore. I'm just so appalled that I did that for so many years and put my life at risk. You know, that's just, we need to know that.
And there's been studies that say that women who smoke kind of put their risk of heart disease in fast forward, that we get heart disease 30 years earlier.
Oh, my gosh.
Than women who don't smoke. And even being exposed to secondhand smoke can really put that into fast forward, which is why, you know, really protecting people from secondhand smoke is so important.
Right. What do you think about the risk factors? What are the major risk factors here?
Well, other than family history, which obviously you can't do much about, the modifiable risk factors are a personal history of hypertension or high blood pressure, mm-hmm. a personal history of high cholesterol, a personal history of diabetes, and a personal history of smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like you said, smoking cessation is vital. The cardiovascular risks of smoking will decrease with cessation of smoking. So, and again, that's a modifiable risk factor. But early detection of other metabolic factors, such as what we call the metabolic syndrome, which includes obesity, glucose intolerance, and dyslipidemia or elevated cholesterol levels, may also have a large factor. Their early detection, such as blood testing of those. Of those factors can change the outcomes.
Right. The other thing that I don't think much is said of, and maybe people had different experiences than I did, I thought, well, I conquered this. I'm really strong. I went back to work too early. And then emotionally, this whole thing of mortality hit me like a ton of bricks. I couldn't get out of bed for a while. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I kept going from doctor to doctor. There's something wrong with me. I feel like I'm going to have another heart attack. I wasn't anywhere near the same symptoms, but I couldn't eat. I lost all this weight. And everybody thought I was crazy. And I felt like I was crazy because I didn't know what the heck was going on. And I needed psychiatric help with this, actually, mm-hmm. never thinking that I would. I think this is something that patients need some help with.
There is still such a stigma attached to heart disease, particularly for women. So it's something that's not necessarily shared. So you don't chat with your girlfriends and somebody else says, oh, my gosh, you know, after my heart attack, this is what I went through.
Right.
You know,
right.
That just isn't part of the public conversation that we're having.
Right.
It's also not part of the public conversation how cardiac drugs that you're prescribed sometimes really can affect your mood. For example, if you're on a beta blocker, that can really either cause depression or make it worse. So just knowing that and knowing, like, oh my gosh, there's a reason for me feeling like
right.
this. It's such a relief. It's a relief to talk to other survivors to say, oh my gosh, yeah, you know that sense of denial that lets you walk out of the house in the morning, that's gone. And it's a scary place to live for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a while. Mm-hmm. And it takes, you know, you're talking about carrying around the cell phone and the aspirin. I mean, when probably the first 2 years after my heart attack, and it's been 8 years now, I would go through this little checklist about, okay, where am I going? And is there going to be a defibrillator there? And if something happens, you know, will somebody call? And am I going to have my cell phone? And do people know where I am? And you just kind of go through this checklist about it. And what am I going to do? But that's part of the healing and just thinking about it and not letting it be something that controls you, but something that you overcome.
Right. You had the same experience, Bobby?
Well, I can say that through the Wheaton Franciscan system in Racine, where I live, you go through cardiac rehab. And I want to tell you that anybody that doesn't do that probably needs to get their head checked first and not worry about their heart.
I love cardiac rehab.
Oh,
I just love it.
I was like the cheerleader in there, but I, in fact, needed probably a little psychological. And we had a psychologist that would come down into the room, and she would, while we were exercising and going through our turning the wheel this way, that was the most annoying little exercise. Just turn this little wheel and you wonder, why are you doing it? And then it hurts so bad, you know why. She would say to me, you know, everyone thinks you're just the greatest here. Why don't we talk? How are you feeling? And I'd say, oh, I'm just fine. She goes, are you really just fine? She goes, how are you doing at home? How do you feel? How do you feel about that you're alive again? How do you feel about this and how do you feel about that? And I point blank that first time said to her, the first words I could get out of my mouth after they pulled those tubes out of my lungs and my throat and everything else was, why didn't you let me die? And can you imagine my poor family hearing me say that? I mean, I cried to myself thinking I ever said that to them. But that's how I felt. Why didn't you let me die? It was painless. It was fast. It was fast. It was severely fast. And why did I have to go through all that? And she goes, because you weren't ready to be gone. Mm-hmm. You have so much more to live. Now, I'm in my mid-60s. And I can say that now I know why, but, you know, then I didn't. And the thing with the drugs, believe me, my husband has been through a heck and back because of those balancing of the drugs.
Right.
And how you react. And luckily, I'd already been through menopause, but he had a good inkling of it being almost like menopause. I mean, this is an irrational woman here. I would be, one minute I would be so happy and really high-spirited, and the next minute I'd be like, don't breathe, don't move, don't touch, don't drink, don't this, don't. And he was like scared to death to be around me, along with everyone else. And I finally began to speak to people who were in the same boat.
Right, right.
Finding out through my doctor that I can get this balanced. There are other drugs.
Right.
There are things that I can use because I'm going to take them for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I went from, 16 or 18 of them down to I have 4.
Good.
And I can live with it. But going back to what the doctor said, and I know that I stayed away from doctors and it's a no, I'll slap my hand. I have no high blood pressure. I have no high cholesterol. I had no diabetes, no high sugars, I had none of that. I am a hypertensive, hyperactive, obsessive compulsive freak that I can't calm down sometimes and I have to bring myself down. And that's done without medication. I do it with yoga.
Yoga.
With meditation.
I'm all for yoga.
And I've had my instances of anxiety attacks and things, but those are my own doing.
Right.
And I know that myself. Medicines aren't going to change that.
Right.
But I had none of that. I inherited the heart of my father.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wonderful heart with a few exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I have to take care of.
Right.
And I'm going to have to be aware of. And those blockages are in the other arteries, too.
Right.
They're just not as bad.
Yeah. Well, you obviously had a reason to stick around.
I did.
Yeah. I'm glad you're with us. That's great. What about, let's talk about this rehab thing. I think that rehab plays a vital role in a person who has had heart disease in recuperation. The camaraderie, you feel strong again. You got somebody guiding over you to make sure that you're okay because you feel tentative about yourself for quite a while. It's vital, don't you think, Dr. Roth? Yeah,
I think it is, and I think it's vital for several reasons. Number one is that the patient learns the things they should and shouldn't be worried about immediately after surgery. They see that there's other people that are in the same situation. They learn from skilled personnel. There's usually nurses and cardiotherapists in those programs that can guide them towards what they should and should be doing, what kind of progress they should be making, and on what timeline. I think also there is a large psychological component to cardiac rehab, and I think that those that do have psychology, you know, and group therapy type sessions, I think is very helpful. The dietitian is very helpful within the cardiac mm-hmm. rehab, mm-hmm. and I think as physicians we get much more feedback immediately from cardiac rehab nurses. I mean, when Bobby goes to cardiac rehab, her physician was getting a report weekly, usually initially, and then staying on. That's called phase two cardiac rehab, which is outside the hospital after an event, and we encourage our patients to go into phase three, which is an unsupervised type of cardiac rehab that they do on their own. And they're given guidelines for that and an exercise prescription by the cardiac rehab service, and that's followed by the physician as well. And I think that also the further modification of other risk factors, like aggressive management of cholesterol levels or aggressive management of hypertension and continued support for smoking cessation, are things that are vital through cardiac rehab.
Yeah. We have to – oh, my, the time has gone by. We need to pause for a moment and welcome phone calls. We have a couple of people already online, and we're going to be jammed here, I'm sure. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. For you to join our conversation, our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, for you to join our conversation on cardiovascular disease and how it affects women. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email is talk@wpr.org. I do want to remind you, because it's an important event, that there's going to be a Go Red for Women luncheon. It's on May 15th here in Milwaukee at the Hilton. And I really urge businesses who are listening, and individuals too, if you can afford to be a part of this, to give this number a call, the American Heart Association, and join us. There will be Diane Nyad is going to be speaking, the swimmer who's an inspirational speaker, and many of us have donated purses so that you can bid on lunch with us, which, you know, will go to a nice heart-healthy place and have heart-healthy chocolate, if you can believe that. We're going to have that, too. I can't quite stay away from that. So if you'd like information about the event coming up a week from Friday, call the American Heart Association. As for Katie, their phone number is 414-227-1412. That's 414-227-1412. Let's go to some of your phone calls. Jackie from Plymouth is our first caller. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I'm always been in a little puzzle here. In my family, my mother died from breast cancer, and cancer tends to be the bigger issue. So I'm always concerned about that. But I have a problem all the time, like the past 2 years, where the left side of my chest sometimes just aches, and I've noticed that my blood pressure has been going up. I always had really low blood pressure, but it's gone from 128. Over 80, all the way up to 140, over 82. And I'm not sure that the diastolic is good. I think it's 90 or something. But anyways, and then my cholesterol readings, I had one in 08, it was 179. And then triglycerides were 71, and HDL was 47, and LDL was at 118. So, but I don't know what to, I had a doctor check out my heart, but they couldn't find anything. Is there anything else could be going on? it just aches at times, and if it sometimes when it really hurts, it will give me like a sharp pain in there.
Well, Dr. Roth.
You know, I think the first issue is to manage the and better assess the chest pain. It would really depend on what type of evaluation was done. You know, we've talked about the fact that women's symptoms may be atypical or less likely to be classic. It's also more difficult to diagnose the disease in women. The chance of a false test is higher in women than it is in men, and the disease actually anatomically may be different in women than in men as well. So you need a better test. And if there's some question of chest pain, whether it's exertional or not, the first screening test is treadmill testing, is electrocardiographic treadmill testing. The problem with that is that it's not perfect either. There may be as much as a 20% false negative rate, which means that the test looks normal, but the disease is there. Further screening can be done with imaging during and after exercise, can be done with either ultrasound or nuclear injectable nuclear agents that can image through pictures of the actual blood flow of the heart to make the test more accurate. There are also some new tests that are out that are becoming more and more popular. There's a special CAT scan of the chest that's done with an injection of an iodine contrast material that is very close to doing a coronary angiogram with minimal invasion. I think that test is probably going to be in our armamentarium more and more in the future. And those are just more accurate tests to do better, more aggressive screening when a woman presents with some atypical symptoms and doesn't find any answers on the first go-around.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Kathleen from Green Bay. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I just would like to, first of all, thank the physicians that are out there trying to figure this out and doing new techniques and trying to keep on the cutting edge to help people like myself. I had a heart attack when I didn't have a heart attack. I had 5 bypasses when I was 50 years old. And actually, I had 2-for-1 when I was in recovery. One of my vessels collapsed, and they went back in. It was working, and they replaced it again. So I actually had 6. Mm-hmm. My symptoms beforehand were midline bronchitis-like. I was walking 4 miles, and I'd get going, and I'd start to cough. I had indigestion and fatigue, and so I was treated for stomach. I was treated for bronchitis. Finally, my physician said, we're going to rule the heart out, and gave me a stress test, and within 12 hours, I had my surgery. So it really is important for women to pay attention to what's going on and to be demanding of their general practitioner if they do have symptoms like this. And the last thing I do want to say is I will be 9 years old in August, because that will be the 9th anniversary of my surgery. And cardiac rehab is absolutely mentally and physically something that is so absolutely important to give you the confidence to have a life.
Yes.
That you're not worrying all the time, because you do. It's just human nature. Every little gas bubble that goes through your body, you think it's a heart attack, perhaps,
right,
again. So you need to have your confidence. So I would like to thank you for having this show, and I'd like to thank the physicians and people that are addressing this subject, because I will be 9 years old in August.
Happy birthday.
Happy rebirthday.
Yeah, happy rebirthday. You wanted to say something, Liz.
Yeah, I think, you know, she did an excellent job of sort of chasing after what she was feeling and not being dissuaded. I often tell women that if there's anything unusual going on from your hips all the way up to the top of your head, and I think women have that spidey sense, you know, we know when something's not right with ourselves. You know, we walk around in our bodies every day. So when there's something really not right, you need to have it checked out. You need to have it checked out right away. And if you don't get an answer that you're satisfied with, you need to ask somebody else and keep asking.
Yeah. Dr. Roth, her symptoms, though, are not symptoms that you would normally associate with heart attack or cardiovascular disease, are they?
Well, her, you know, the one bothersome thing about her symptoms, I think, to me in hearing the story, was that they were exertional, that she described sort of a bronchitis, chest fullness and cough with exertion. And frankly, that means that the heart's not pumping blood properly, the lungs get congested, and it can feel and present like bronchitis. But again, women are, you know, that's not an unusual story in a woman. And the very fact that those things are exertional, I think, would behoove her to push further for evaluation. And as it sounded, the stress test really brought out the problem.
Right. Our number, a couple lines are open now, 800-486-8655. And the email, we have a couple of those too, talk@wpr.org. Tracy is next from Madison. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Great. I'm really excited to hear about this program. I wanted to comment on one of the first comments that you made about early intervention and education. My mom had a heart attack last June at 82, and she had 5 bypasses. Mm. She had had cholesterol, high cholesterol, for years, and I don't think that she realized, or even my sisters and I realized, how dangerous that could be. And we tried to help her watch what she ate, and she tried to be careful of what she ate, but really, she should have been on medication, and we had no idea that cholesterol could cause this serious of a heart attack. So I think the intervention and education is so very important for women to understand that when you have high cholesterol, you really need to, in any kind of symptoms, you really need to take that seriously and learn about heart disease. So this is a great program.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Comments from anybody?
I'd like to bring up the one point. I think those are good comments. And when all of a sudden a family member has a cardiac event, the whole family should be sensitized to the issues that they are at higher risk. And I think the onus is on the patient also, but really on their physicians to go look for those risk factors, whether they're classic risk factors such as high cholesterol or smoking or hypertension, but also aggressively screen family members, especially if other family members have had particularly presentation of the cardiac disease at early in life. And again, men in their 40s and women in their 50s, I think the rest of the family should be screened aggressively. There are other novel risk factors, and such as HDL, which is the good cholesterol. There are significant people who have normal LDL levels, which is the bad cholesterol, and that looks good. But if HDL is low as well, that also puts the patient at significant risk. 30-some-odd percent of patients that have heart attacks have normal LDL levels. And we're not aggressive enough at screening for other risk factors, and particularly further breakdowns of LDL levels, further breakdown of other metabolic risk factors should be addressed, especially if there's a family history and no other explanation such as smoking or personal history of hypertension or diabetes.
Right. And Liz, I don't think we ever asked you what caused your heart attack. It was under such unusual circumstances.
It was indeed under very unusual circumstances. My heart attack was caused by my pregnancy, and it's a rare complication of pregnancy, but certainly not unheard of. I'm unusual in that I survived it.
Hmm.
Basically, the hormones that were there to soften everything up for birth softened the lining of my cardiac artery. It sort of sheared away from the outside of the artery, fell across the opening like a trap door, stopped the flow of blood, and that's what happened.
Oh, my. Let's go to an email. I'm 62-year-old female postmenopausal who has never smoked. Do I have an increased risk of any cardiac complications because I grew up in a home where both parents were chain smokers? Also, how do I fight the tummy fat that I've acquired since my period stopped? Once, not too long ago, I was a rather thin 120 pounds. Now I'm 160 pounds and shrinking, too. Dr. Uarth, you want to start with it?
The answer to her first question is yes, she is at higher risk because of menopause. There is an increased incidence of cardiovascular disease with menopause in women. The tummy fat type of issue is some of a metabolic issue as well. And I think that the approach to that is with screening for other risk factors, but also, see a nutritionist and exercise therapist really for working on the tummy fat. People, both men and women, who have significant abdominal obesity are at increased risk of cardiovascular disease.
What was that figure? You're probably aware of this, too, that you're supposed to measure your waist.
30 inches for women. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's called basically, you want to be shaped like a pear. You want to be curvy. You want your waist to be about 80% of what your hips are, and not like an apple. Because if you're shaped like a pear, you're half as likely to have heart disease, which is great. You know, you want to be curvy. That's a good female thing. With the belly fat issue, some of the factors about belly fat that people are not necessarily aware of is stress really can, because you're, when your body is stressed, it present, it makes a hormone called cortisol, which, if you don't let your body relax and come down from that high level of cortisol, it makes your body gain more weight in the middle around your organs, which is not where you want it. You want it around your booty, where you know you have muscle and bone.
Mm-hmm. Can you do exercises? Is that the result of exercise, or is it diet to get rid of that kind of body fat?
It's a combination. It's a combination of diet, of exercise, and doing exercise that's not only cardiovascular for your heart, but some strength training, which will pump up your metabolism, which helps get rid of that, but also sleeping and drinking enough water. You know, you have to do all of that in combination in order to really get rid of that belly fat.
Mm-hmm. You want to comment on this, Dr. Roth?
I would agree. I think that the again, menopause and stress hormones in general, one of which is cortisol, have significant impact on the increasing risk of cardiovascular disease in women. I think that life is more stressful. There's more women in the workplace. And I think that has a lot to do with it as well. The modification of those lifestyle problems does help. And I think that the early detection of that problem is inherent in the management of the risk factors in women before or after a cardiac event.
Mm-hmm. Bobby, you talked about yoga. Are you a faithful practitioner of yoga?
I did it many, many years ago and found that in my psychological help with cardiac rehab that I could bring down my stress level by just going back to it again and retraining myself in some of the beginning movements, learning how to relax. As I said, I'm obsessive compulsive and hyperactive, and nobody can make me slow down.
Right.
But when we're going back to the weight thing, I mean, I wore a size 22, and I know I'm not thin now, but I wear a 12. And
good for you.
I have
that's great.
I have a long way to go. I mean, I still have 25 pounds that I really need to take off. But the other thing is, it isn't just losing weight. You have to change your thinking. You have to understand, if you don't come first, your body's not going to take care of you. You have to come first.
Absolutely.
You can't take care of your kids, your husband, your family, your mother, your father that they need help. You need to take care of you. I walk a lot every day. I don't do enough on the weightlifting and all, you know, and I should, because the flab is there. But walking is a big, big stress reliever, believe it or not. Find a friend and chat while you walk. You're going to learn that your pace is really good if you can talk while you walk.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, women who maintain good female friendships are 30% less likely to have heart disease. So you're getting it both ways that
there
way.
There you go.
Right.
Now you just pick up those weights when you're watching television. You know, watch the news, do the weights.
No,
you got it made.
I'm obsessive compulsive. I don't sit well for television.
But that me time is really important, taking time to take care of yourself.
I agree. I mean, I remember the time when we were talking about that aftermath, when I was just pretty much in bed. Who knows what realm I was in. But I just felt like I had evaporated. You know, people would come in and see me and my family, and it was like I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't there. I wasn't good to anybody. So you do have to think about yourself.
Right.
And we're normally, we don't do that. Women don't do that. We got our children. We got our jobs. We got... Our focus is on the other people in our lives, don't you think?
Right.
Absolutely.
And I'm very fortunate to have a lot of very, very good women friends.
Oh, yes.
And when I was coming
Thank God for them.
And I'd be home after I'd have a rehab every other day, and they'd come over and they'd go, well, don't just sit there. Come on, let's talk. Let's do this. Let's do that. What are you doing with rehab? What are you doing? It brings your spirits up.
Yes.
It brings you back
yes.
to the reality that there is life after death.
Yes, yes, exactly. There is life. And they bring you food and heart healthy food to boot.
Oh, yes.
And couldn't be alive without it. Let's go to Charles from Oneida next. Hi, Charles. Charles, you got to turn the radio down. All right, Charles, I'm going to ask. Oh, I know, that wasn't Charles. I made a mistake. That was Tracy. Saying goodbye to Tracy. Hello, Charles.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi.
Hi, I just had a helpful suggestion for everybody.
All right.
In 2001, I had 4 bypass open heart surgery due to 2 heart attacks in one day. And so that got me going real hard on reading up on nutrition. And I had quit smoking when I was 19 years old. I'd only smoked for a couple of years, by the way. And I gave up drinking when I was 24. And here I'm 59 years old, and I get this heart attack, and I'm just stymied by it. Anyway, I'm now 67, and I found out that by drinking grape juice and eating anything with grape in a grape jam, grape jelly, the grape has a natural factor of cleaning out the bad stuff in the arteries.
What do you think, Dr. Roth?
Well, this goes back to a lot of the literature that we've seen about wine, and red wine in particular, and which comes from the same kind of grapes. And I think that Concord grape juice, grape preserves, as long as the pulp of the grape and the peel of the grape is included in the preparation, there are compounds that we call phytosterols that do have significant impact on cholesterol metabolism, lowering fat levels, lowering triglycerides as well. The alcohol in wine does have a component as well, but there are healthy components of grapes and other plants as well.
Mm. Do both of you do that? And what about fish oil too, which is all the rage, and vitamin D, which has been talked about very much?
One of my prescriptions is the omega-3. Yeah.
Do you do that as well, Elizabeth?
I don't take a fish oil. We try to have fish twice a week. We don't always make it. Usually, I'm not the biggest fan of fish in the world, but I actually had a fish aversion when I was pregnant that I really haven't gotten over. We try at least once a week to have it, sometimes twice.
Hmm. Mine was smoothies, ice cream smoothies. They weren't very good for me, but I can't even look at them now.
Seriously?
Isn't it? Oh, yeah, isn't
sad.
That funny?
Yeah. Or malt. That's I think sad. Of a malt, and I think I'm watching my heart close.
Yeah.
As I, how can you drink that?
Right.
I'm not a big red meat eater. And I never was a huge red meat eater. Mm-hmm. I love fish to an extreme. I really love fish.
Good.
And
good
seafood
for you.
And fruits and vegetables. I just overeat.
What about, what's the scientific advice now? I know that it's not completely in on vitamin D and on fish oil. It is more than vitamin D, I think.
Well, I think there is a lot of it, as far as vitamin D is concerned, there is a lot of medical literature there with not only heart disease, but hypertension, other metabolic things. If there is a deficiency of vitamin D, which we do see significantly in this climate because there are lack of sun exposure, there are significant metabolic problems with vitamin D deficiencies. And if I don't know. I don't propose that everyone takes vitamin D supplements, but if there's a simple blood test for vitamin D and if the level is low, then supplementing the vitamin D and calcium does significantly improve cardiovascular risk.
Hmm. Sure.
The fish oil issue does have a lot to do with metabolism, and a lot of people don't eat enough fish, and it really depends on the type of fish and the preparation of the fish to make sure that it's healthful enough, but fish oil, even over-the-counter fish oil products of 1 to 2,000 milligrams a day are helpful, not only because of their effect on metabolism, they also have an anticoagulant effect similar to aspirin.
Mm. More phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about women and heart health this hour of the program. Our guests are Bobby Hasek-Berger, who's a heart attack survivor, had her heart attack and surgery 4 years ago. Liz Green is a heart attack survivor, very rare complication of pregnancy. She had twins. She had bypass surgery all within, a half hour. This was 8 years ago. Everybody's fine now. She's a spokesperson for the American Heart Association, chair of the Advocacy Committee in Wisconsin, and author of two books, and they are The Busy Woman's Guide to a Healthy Heart and Passion for Life, Five Simple Strategies to Find the Happiness, Satisfaction, and Zest That You Deserve. Also joining us is Dr. Rob Roth. He did medical training at Michael Reese Hospital in Chicago. I mentioned that because I was born there. And he went to medical school at Tulane. He's been with Wisconsin Cardiovascular Group since founding it. And he is now on the staff of Columbia St. Mary's Hospital, serves as the medical director of the catheterization lab of the Ozaukee campus, where he's president of the medical staff, has been repeatedly voted one of Milwaukee's best doctors. All right, back to phone calls. And let's go to George from Milwaukee next. Hello, George.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I've got two questions. One, is coated aspirin, such as I think something like Ecotrin or something like that. My wife has a very sensitive digestive stomach. And so is coated aspirin as effective in, you know, when you take it for the first sign of a heart attack as Walgreens aspirin or Bayer aspirin or whatever, whatever? And my second question is, how can one increase HDL? I recently had a blood lipid thing, and my HDL was lower. So I would just throw these two questions out.
All right, George. Thanks, George.
Well, to answer the first question about aspirin, coated aspirin is not as effective in the acute phase of the disease just because it takes longer to get into the bloodstream unless you chew it. What we do recommend is up to 4 baby aspirin or 1 full adult aspirin chewed during the acute phase of the, of a cardiac event that increased the absorption of the bloodstream. Coated aspirin, whether brand name or generic, is fine for long-term management.
Okay, thanks very much.
To answer the second question about regarding HDL, HDL is very difficult to raise. We do know that that low HDL is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease independent of what other parameters such as LDL and triglycerides. The management of low HDL syndromes has to do mainly with exercise, moderation of alcohol intake, 1 to 2 drinks daily for men, 1 alcoholic beverage daily for women, no more than that. And the other is niacin, preparations of niacin, which is one of the B vitamins, usually in large doses, the 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day, can raise HDL. There's some other prescription drugs out that will help as well.
And thanks for the call. Can we talk just a little bit more about exercise? Bobby, you said you're an avid walker. Liz, what do you do for exercise?
It really depends on the day.
Whoops, let me get your mic on there.
It depends on the day. And
today, what are you going to do
for
exercise?
What am I going to do today? I will probably walk today or clean the house.
Walk.
Clean the house needs to be clean. And I gained 80 pounds when I was pregnant, so it took a while to get rid of that. And what I really found is that I needed to figure out, especially with infant twins, a way to work exercise into my daily life rather than having it set aside as something different and really make it a routine and a habit. And I have my husband to thank for that because he really was encouraging after cardiac rehab to make sure that I was doing the work that I needed to do. But using things like a pedometer is a great
thing. I have to get
thing.
One of those.
Oh, so it's a count, great yeah. thing. So you count your steps. You strap it on your waistband. You count your steps. And if you get 10,000 in a day, you've done the equivalent.
That's a lot.
Well, here's the thing. You don't have to actually step. If you just stand there and wiggle your hips. Seriously.
It moves really.
Anytime you can make that thing go... It counts. Huh. So anytime you're on your feet, you could be moving around a little bit. And that's the key, is just to be constantly sort of moving.
Dancing.
Yeah.
Dancing.
Absolutely. You put a dance tape on and just boogie with your vacuum cleaner.
That's absolutely
you have
right.
no idea.
It's like that great scene from...
boogie with your vacuum cleaner.
You know, dance around the kitchen when you're making dinner.
I'm the best salsa dancer with my canister vacuum. Whipping that sucker on.
All right, I'll try that today. Dr. Roth, what does the medical community say about prevention, exercise programs, and for rehab?
I think that exercise programs are excellent at any stage of life and cardiovascular disease in general. What we recommend as far as an exercise prescription...
Catherine's moving. You have to know.
We recommend as far as exercise prescription that you watch your heart rate. And the guidelines would say that your maximum expected heart rate is 220 minus your age. And that you exercise to a level to get your heart rate to between 70% to 80% of predicted maximum heart rate and maintain it there for 20 minutes at a time.
Okay.
If you're doing that 3 days a week, you're doing cardiac rehab. That's what's basically done there. So whether it's dancing in the kitchen or walking outside or wiggling your hips, if your heart rates are up in that range, then you are getting an aerobic benefit of the cardiovascular system.
Huh. Hula hoops. I saw the hula hoop from years ago. That's
great
good,
exercise.
Huh? It is, isn't it?
My friend has a mom that's in a nursing home, and we went in there one day, and these are people who are still very capable of understanding and doing things, and we were sitting with them, and I said, you know, why don't we get your friend from the room here? Let's put on a little music. And she said, what kind of music? And I said, oh, how about Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett? And their eyes were like flashing. And I'm sitting there and on the chair with them and we're doing a little samba and a little rumba. And they go, we could do this. And I said, how about this idea? Why don't you do it with a couple of one-pound weights in your hand? And I'm telling you, they got into it. And now they've got a whole group of people lined up in the hall doing the little dance with the little weights. If they don't have weights, they get canned goods.
That's wonderful. Thank you all so much. It was an inspirational hour and an important hour for giving people information, too. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Do want to remind you. Oh, I wanted to ask you, Liz, where are your books?
You can find me at busywomansguide.com.
Busywomansguide.com. We also want to remind you that the American Heart Association Go Red for Women luncheon is taking place a week from Friday here in Milwaukee, and it will be a grand affair. If you are listening and you're a business and you want to get a table or an individual who would like to support the work of the American Heart Association, I'm going to give you a number to call, 414-227-1412. That's 414-227-1412. Our thanks to Dr. Rob Roth, cardiologist with the Cardiovascular Group, Columbia St. Mary's Hospitals, Liz Green, heart attack survivor, spokesperson for the American Heart Association, Bobby Hassock-Berger, heart attack survivor, and full of life some years later. Keep going, everybody. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to John Treader for producing the hour, to Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder for help with production. This is the Ideas Network.